For yet another episode of
Not Your Common Conversation.
Great. My name is Omar Henderson, and I'm here with my partner and co-host
Chris Downing.
That's right, the man with the plan. So here, what's today's date? March the what?
I think it's the 18th.
The 18th. Yeah. Okay.
The 18th.
The 18th of March. So. Yeah. So, Chris, you know, we're just going to start out lightly today. So what's going on in your life? How are things going for you?
Well, I just finished doing a production for a client, pretty well-known client Yeah, I just finished doing a job with the client, and a gala, shout out to the Urban League.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Shout out to the Urban League, it was great. Did that with my cohort. We had Mike Ferguson was the main guy, the lead guy on this, and I was, you know, tech director, part producer, stage manage, put the show together, under his leadership, and we had some great people. Shout out to Tim Wilson, Black Magic Tim. We had Ramel, and shout out to Kevin, my man. He did the damn thing. There was a lot of many people. Shout out to Gabe. There were a lot of people moving parts. Shout out to Miriam, Eugene, a lot of different people that are part of my team that helped make this happen. So that was you mentioned what I did. That was a big thing. We had it on Friday. It was fantastic, amazing event over at the Ronald Reagan Building, International Building. Big venue.
That's down on Constitution Avenue.
It's on 14th in Pennsylvania.
I think the
address reads 1300 Pennsylvania Avenue.
That's right, yes, that's right.
Big space. You know, we had the main atrium, the two ballrooms on each side. Good time had by all.
Yeah.
I think the client was, shout out to Kim. She was amazing, Kim Corbin. She was amazing. Shout out to Mr. Lambert, the president, who is just an amazing person, you know, just his vibe. And we had I got a chance to meet Wes Moore. Oh, shout out to Wes Moore. I've always been a fan of this guy.
It
turns out his mom, who's from Jamaica, as my mom is from Jamaica, so we had a connection there.
All right.
And just, I've always admired a cat. He's a well-spoken. It's always, you know, for anybody who is proud of someone who identifies and is connected, whether it's from your hometown or your nationality the minute I saw him, I think I first saw him on Morning Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just, the way he came across from Baltimore, the way he came across he just always came across as sincere in the way that, to be honest, in the way that former President Obama did. I'm trying to think, I'm spacing on his first name. This is embarrassing.
Barack Obama,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Shout out to him. And so, you know, as a Black man myself, I to see someone well-spoken, well-read, and here's the thing: when I look both of those guys, I see a glimpse of compassion and empathy and love and the way they choose their words and what they say. And so, you know, I met them both, but I don't know them personally. But that's the energy that comes across. That's the energy that they are projecting. Mm-hmm. And so that means something. I don't need to necessarily know them on a personal level. You can kind of get a vibe, and you've lived long enough, you kind of, you know, get something from somebody. And that's what I got from Westmore. Shout out to Westmore. Shout out to Miriam Bowser. She was there, did her thing. Shout out to her. I know she's, you know, dealing with the crime situation, and, you know, whether you like her, you don't like her, you're with her politics or not. Also, is equally as proud that she's doing her thing. There were a lot of. It was great. I think everybody had a good time, and they raised some money for the organization and that kind of thing. So, you walk away with a sense of pride.
Right. I got that. So, you know, you remind me of a conversation that we had when one of our first podcasts was all around production.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and that's right.
It sounds like this was a pretty big production.
Yeah. You know, we had multiple cameras, robotic cameras. We had Tim, who's amazing. I know you guys have seen him out in the world. Tim Wilson, Black Magic Tim, shout out to Cyberstorm Digital. Shout out to Dream Life Media Group. Shout out to, I think Mike's company is OmniSource Events. And so, you know, it takes a lot of different, oftentimes people see these kind of events and they don't understand. It takes a team of people.
Yeah.
Shout out to RS Media One. It takes a team. Shout out to, I could shout out my man Fernando. I mean, these are the people and companies that come together, who've worked together and come together to make these events happen. Tim and I had a debriefing, and he said, you know, people come up to me and they see me on this, you know, he has this amazing gimbal, apparatus. Right? Well, it's more than that. I mean, he's on wheels, he's got the Steadicam, and this is something that he put together and very unique. I mean, the way that he shoots and the kind of shots that he gets, knowing his gear, not everybody does it like that, and everybody sees it. And so he said to me, you know, people come to him and say, man, you know, can you do this? And they see him just doing that. They don't, you know, realize it's a team of people. And what makes him, myself, and other people of value, that they have relationships and they put these teams together. You know?
Right.
Even when you see these big companies, they're working with a lot of different people. There's a lot of moving parts.
Hmm.
But we've been doing it. I've been doing it. I can't tell you how many events like this I've done in my life. In some capacity, you know, whether it's stage manager, directing, doing the video packaging, doing sound, shooting, in some shape or form. You know, I hold a lot of different positions, and I'm thankful. And we had a professional team. The sister Miriam came in and brought her professionalism to it, and really brought her own energy that really contributed to the heightening the overall production.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's interesting. So first of all, I'm inspired by what you just said.
Okay.
Well, because a couple of things you talked about. You talked about team. You mm-hmm. talked about professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned all the various companies and entities that came together to produce this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I look at, so I'm reflecting and reminded of what I'm up to with Phantom Funk is creating a musicians collective.
Yeah.
You know, where people will rotate in and up based on their availability. And you asked me earlier today.
Talk more about that.
Well, you asked me earlier today, have you all been rehearsing? And I kind of felt a little ashamed because I said no, but what I didn't express to you was these guys are all professional.
Right, right. They've done this before.
So, you know, so I can share with them the music.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, we have an event coming up on Sunday the 24th. We're going to live stream the performance of four songs.
Okay.
And, you know, I've been talking to them and they're like, yeah, I've been practicing. So,
right.
So, you know, my drummer said to me, he said, where I went to school, my teacher told me, if you want to be good, you got to be able to learn 12 songs in a week.
Which, wow. I mean, that's commitment.
That's commitment.
It's also, yeah, it's commitment, which commitment, but I don't know what that
That's means. Your phone, I think, or your computer or something.
Yeah. I'm sorry. That's
Rutro. Anyway, welcome to our life, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, yeah, welcome to our life. Sorry about that. I'm not going to answer this, although this is one of the hosts that we were going to have on the show.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, Brother Shahid, but I'm going to text him. But continue on. You tell the audience about the experience of being, I dare say, now a band leader.
Well, yeah, so, you know, everything is going well. The biggest caveat are the thoughts in my head that tell me that, you know, when I'm not in communication with people, my doubts arise, you know, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, you know, the voices just get worse. So like, you know, you're not in control of it and blah, blah, blah. And this needs to happen and that needs to happen. And if I'm not careful, listening to that voice will totally diminish the amount of fun that's available through this process, mm-hmm. and the fun that can be had when we do our live event. But I was just thinking about reflecting on what you said earlier and how, yeah, this is a team that I'm putting together, and you know, quite phenomenal. I had a conversation with a new guy who's going to be doing MC work with us and vocals.
Okay,
he also sings. And his name is Mason. Shout out to Mason. And nice. Come What's to up, find Mason? Out, he played golf professionally.
Oh, okay. That's something. That's right down my alley.
That's right down your alley.
I love golf. As bad as I am at it, I still love it.
Yeah. So I told him about you, and I told him that we would all hook up sometime. You know,
that would be great.
Yeah. He said right after college, he went to college for communications, and right after college, he went out on the circuit. But he didn't do the PGA tour. He did what is equivalent to the baseball farm tour. You know, baseball has farm teams.
Okay.
Yeah, those guys get paid too.
Right.
So, you know, underneath the PGA, there's a
league. Another league,
there's
right.
There's another tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I love it.
It may be more local to like a region or something like that. So, yeah. So
yeah, we definitely got to meet and talk.
But the pertinence to his being connected to Phantom Funk Collective is that not only is he a vocalist and can rap, but he's also marketing.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, so all of this team effort is coming together, and you know, when people, you know, in the audience, they look at a program or they listen to a song, you know, there's a lot of work that goes behind
that. There's a lot of work that goes and different people that sometimes you don't readily see in front of you, but they're part of the, you know, the total package.
Exactly. Unless you have the long credits at the end of the movie.
It's exciting, man. But before you finish talking about Phantom Funk, can you tell our audience where they can actually see you guys?
All right. So on Facebook, on this coming Sunday, which is March the 24th at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can see us on Facebook, yet in order to see us, you have to like and follow Phantom Funk Music Collective. All right? I found out there is another Phantom Funk out there, believe it or not. Uh-oh. So I had to distinguish ourselves from them.
Are they in the area?
No, they're down in Florida. It's a dude.
Okay.
All right? And is down in Florida, as far as I can tell.
Okay.
All right? So, yeah, Phantom Funk Music Collective. So you want to follow and like that page, and then you'll be notified when the live stream occurs, which is this coming Sunday. And at 3 p.m., and we'll do four songs.
Okay.
And I'll introduce myself and some of the members of the collective as well, those who are going to be present.
That's cool.
Yeah, and it'll be fun, you know, because I'm going to greet you like you're standing there in front of me.
I love it.
I'm going to greet you like you're standing right in front of me, and I'm inviting you into our rehearsal studio, which is at my home.
Okay.
All right. And so I'll be carrying the phone or whatever the camera I'll be using, and then I'm going to set it down like as if you're sitting on a sofa.
Wow.
I'm going to say, come on in and take a seat.
Giving the audience the experience, the real experience, as if as though they were there.
Exactly. That's the, yeah.
That's cool.
Exactly. Because cool. I want to make it more interesting than, you know, all of a sudden the band comes on and then one, two, three, four, you know, we go into a song. There's got to be that interaction between us and the audience. So
once again, Phantom Funk, shout out to Phantom Funk.
Yeah. Phantom Funk Music Collective, and funk is spelled P-H-U-N-K.
Okay.
Yeah, so Phantom Funk Music Collective.
P-H.
Yeah.
Like we used to spell, oh, well, she is fat.
Yeah, exactly.
P-H-A-T. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah.
So I don't know if that was regional, but we used to say it. But you know, one of the things while we're, and this is sort of, we're just having a, what did you say? You want to just have like a...
Yeah, light free-for-all conversation.
You know, I thought about how important it is for a human being. Because we were at a conversation with someone. And we were talking about... trying to figure out who it was. But we were talking about, you know, what would have a person... be greedy or evil or not care about the other person, the people around them. And what came up to me is lack of empathy. There was another word, lack of compassion. There was another one that I, but because those things, being a human, you would have to almost be devoid of those things not to see your connection with another human. And I don't care what kind of human it is, male, female, any ethnicity, that is a human in most cases with the nose, eyes, legs, mouth, ears, all the things that you have. Oh, I know what it is. Oh my goodness. I don't know if I mentioned this on I recently went to see the movie Origin.
Yeah, I saw that.
And yeah, you saw it. And I came back just really excited because she made that distinction about, you know, casteism and how I gathered racism is a byproduct of that, or racism is a tool of the caste system. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, people, you know, when we look at what would make a person, I saw something on the news, man, at the gym where this young boy, I think 14, 15 years old. They drove up in a car by next to another car, smashed the back of the window out of the car, and took out whatever, a bag, and got back in the car and drove off. And the people came out running after a car. Or some young kid stole a car. And so it's hard for me to really understand what makes someone want to take harm another human being in that way. Like, what? I get. Do you not understand or care about yourself? Like, there's a possibility in a lot of cases you're on camera, they're going to catch you sooner or later, and your life is going to be impacted. Not only did you impact someone else's life, but your life will be impacted by that, by either, you know, in some, you know, in a lot of cases you could die, a lot of cases you put yourself in a position where you're not going to have a valuable life or a life that's of quality. Because you're going to jail or you're hurt, I'm speechless at what. So I said, wow, it's got to be lack of empathy. It's got to be lack of you know, compassion.
Is it though?
What do you mean?
Well, take the position that, well, I'm going to take the position and then pose it to you, that people don't do things necessarily against others. They do things for themselves.
Right. I get that. Okay. So let's unpack that.
All right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So then that's a question. I'm sorry to say that's kind of heaping another question on top of your question, but it leaves room for I don't know, a conversation, so to speak, or, you know, discovering, like, well, once you discover that a person is doing something for themselves, not necessarily against you.
Right.
Or against others.
Yeah.
Then the question comes up, what's missing that they feel so desperately to replace? Or what is it that they're really after? You know, I feel your frustration because I wonder, like, right now, you know, there's a big crime wave in D.C.
Right.
And so the answer is to put more cops on the street, create these drug-free zones. I mean, it's like trying to exterminate rats
or roaches. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they just dig deeper into the ground and then surface someplace else. So what's happening such that authorities are not asking these questions to people who have already committed these crimes?
We talked about this, right?
You know, it's like, okay, somebody went out and robbed, a bunch of kids went out and, you know, gang rushed a jewelry store, as an example.
Right.
Well, there are people that are in jail that did the same thing.
Right.
Right? At one point, do you have a conversation with those who were in jail so that you, the government, the powers that be, are smarter about handling this in the future, as opposed to putting more cops on the street? Because that's actually teasing the ones who commit crime. Oh, you put an obstacle here? Well, I can work my way around that. They'll find a way to work around it. But what is it that's driving that working around? What is it that they're after? What is it that they're trying to fulfill on? You know, you asked the question earlier about, I guess why they do it. Or why a person would be greedy, or why a person would be inconsiderate, or why a person would be... These are questions that aren't being asked by the authorities to really get a handle on human behavior. Everybody's in reaction mode as opposed to trying to be proactive or be a step ahead. You know, they think a step ahead is setting a better mousetrap, when in actuality it could be orienting people in a different way, just not anticipating that everybody is going to be oriented in the same way. You know, and that may look like indoctrination of some sort, but what I wanted to say was, in answer to that question, what came up for me right away is, what is the driving factor? I would dare say that it's something that occurred much earlier in the lives of these people. It didn't happen last week, or maybe...
Oh, for sure.
You know,
yeah.
It didn't happen last month. It was like years ago, something came up that went off inside of them, in which they felt that they were beyond impunity. Or they didn't
impunity. I mean, this whole thing...
Being punished.
I mean, it's kind of... I mean, they're not doing anything that hasn't been done before. You know, corporate America has their hands just as dirty. There's some politicians. I don't know what that was.
That pop.
Yeah.
There it is. Keeps coming up again, right? Yeah.
Forgive us, folks.
Yeah.
It's not about making a person wrong. It's, you know, whether you're a politician or, you know, on the streets, or you're executive and you have the interest of your stockholders and that kind of thing, or whether you're, you know, in some gang or militia or whatever that is. It's like that. How does it supersede? I mean, if you believe in any higher power, How does that supersede? And you know, that higher power has made us all.
Oh my God! I got an answer for you. Keep going.
Okay. I mean. So how does that? How do you not think about the karma, the energy, what your the contradictive behavior of human life that you're putting out there? Are you that angry? Are you that full of conviction on, you know, I mean, do you not? But I mean, again, it's a very complicated situation. I mean, again, well, go ahead. You sound like you got something you want to say.
Oh, yeah. I disagree. I don't think it's complicated.
Okay.
I think it's simple, but I think people are ignoring the simple answers and processes. The simple answer and process. Well, you know, it's like, you lock up a criminal for what they done. You know, then you put him in prison. And then you just kind of leave them to survive. You don't question what was the motive?
Well, I mean, because we've had this conversation, I agree on some level, but then I'm like, to try to rationalize, you know, somebody's irrational thoughts and every person's irrational. So I'm hoping they're doing some kind of data. They're collecting some kind of data on these people, but yeah. Where were you going?
Well, collecting data is important because it then empowers them. But setting a better mousetrap is not it.
I like how you put that. Setting a better mousetrap is not it. I mean, but look at wars. That's how wars are fought.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Set another mousetrap for
and these wars are being declared because, you know, some leader feels like he needs to push the button to call for the war, even though there's so-called checks and balances in place, like you can't declare war without the House of Representatives enacting the Wars Act or whatever that is. What was I going to say? That, those checks and balances, but, you know, quite honestly, does that stuff really ever count? I mean, when has it ever stopped a president from going to war? And this is an interesting conversation because this is where we have this fantasy that we all live these lives separate from what we do. Now, I'll get to my point in a moment. I'll get to it right now.
Mm-hmm.
People want to separate humanity from law or humanity from government,
mm-hmm.
right? But you know what the irony of it is?
What's that?
It's humans that make it up.
Right.
If there were no humans on this planet, there would be no laws. There would just be the planet and the animals.
There would be no need for...
Exactly. Yeah. So there'd be no laws, okay? Right. So we make them up. But then we totally separate what happens with lawmakers, political leaders, with family upbringing and their lives. And so
the laws get broken.
The laws get broken, but we don't make the correlation between that and something that might have happened in this person's life that would drive them to break this law. And it's not an excuse.
Right.
But it gives us a better understanding because if we don't want to see this particular law broken again, then maybe the preemptive steps that are taken are done much earlier in a person's life than when they get arrested.
Yeah.
And you'll only find this out by talking to those who have been arrested.
I'm with you, man.
You got to get them in a conversation.
Get to the origin. Get to the crux of it.
I know I've mentioned on this show before that there's a guy out here now. I forget his name. I would say he's German, but he's doing a series of interviews where he's discovering the impact of trauma on the lives of people who are now in jail and how the trauma had pretty much impacted their lives, that they made choices in reaction to that trauma that put them in jail. One particular person is a guy who was in jail for life, and mm-hmm. He was in jail for life because he shot somebody. And he shot somebody because he was mad that his father was deported But he gets mad that his father was deported. He was really mad that his father never came back. And his father kept promising him coming back, but he never came back.
And that had an impact on his
life. Oh, that had an impact on his life.
Yeah.
And so he was just angry.
Yeah.
He was just angry. And, you know, I want to be honest with you. I need to watch myself lately because I'm getting angry at people.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say. Hurt people hurt people.
Yeah, hurt people. Exactly. But see, somehow that doesn't work its way into the political realm. That does not seem to become a consideration when a mayor, governor, congressman, senator, vice president, president make a decision or make a choice about how to operate. That somehow just dissipates. It disappears. It's not thought about.
Yeah, and that decision that leader makes has it permeates throughout the land, not directly and indirectly. You know, we sort of acquiesce to the leader. They set the tone. You know, the leader sets the tone, and whether you agree with it or not, it has an impact that makes itself, that permeates throughout the community. And so I think, you know, what's important is that people see the relations between someone outside themselves and themselves. Like there's a, even with a police officer, with a person that they might be confronting and vice versa. The person that is being confronted also has a connection with the police officer. But instead, a lot of times, it's totally us against them. And I just, it's shameful to see how say to hear and see some of the things that other humans are doing to other humans. Listen, I have to tell you, I'm not a perfect human being. I've done some things in my life that I haven't been proud of, or I'm quite frankly ashamed of, and through those were things that shaped me and helped develop me and had me understand how, as I get older, I see how wrong those things were. I never shot anybody. I never had the desire to shooting anybody. I've never really had the desire to rob or harm somebody. It's just not me. So I don't understand. I get people being desperate. That's why it's very important not to put yourself in a place of desperateness. And some of it's, you know, some people are like, well, I need to eat. I need to. And so I get that. I need you. But there are ways, especially in America, there are ways for you to go about things. And it may take a while. It may take a little more, require a little bit more effort. But the impact will be less damaging to you or the people around you. And so you have to take, you know, there's a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, a friend of ours, shout out to Diane, who this weekend had an event around finance with young people, the age of, in the 20-year-old, because the thought was to think about your finances on the front end, as opposed to where a lot of us think about our finances on the back end, you know, like when we get older and we start retiring, we start figuring out how much, you know, money we're going to have to live the rest of our lives. But how important it is to think about it, and advantageous to think about it on the front end so that you can get in front of it. And one of the things I was offering up to her in terms of thought is that people have to understand that you are a business, you are a corporation, you are an entity into itself, meaning that when you get up in the morning, every day you're granted life, you have a decision to make of what it is that you do that is going to contribute to the goals and how you want to have a life. I read something that was in a book this yesterday. It was the Dial of Mom, and it said, how you spend your time is directed to, it just left my mind. How you spend your time is directed to what your priorities are.
Yeah, definitely.
And so you have to think about the people, places, and things that you do. And I know while you're young, especially when you're 17, 18, 19, 20, you're trying to negotiate the thought that, you see, in most cases, when somebody's in there and living at home with under their parents or parent life, they get a roof over their head. They don't understand. You get a roof over your head, you get food on the table, you get clothing, and for an adult has a big part of their lives are trying to get just that, a roof over their head. So you don't understand how significant it is for your parents to have provided that for you from the time you were born up until the time you have to do it for yourself. So you think you're big and bad, and you get out of high school and you're like, woo wee, wah. Then you realize, and it's funny because you want to be grown, but you're still partially asking your parents for stuff. Oh, well, but I'm big and bad, but can you give me some money for my telephone bill? Can I come stay there? Can I, you can't. And so, we've heard growing up, I'm sure you heard this. This is my house. You live in my house. These are my rules. And there's a reason. They're not saying that just to dictate. The person, if you're giving somebody something, I don't care what, if you're helping somebody, giving somebody, there's a price to pay for that. And the price your parents say, you got to live by my rules. You can't do anything you want. Or here's the thing. You can go get your own house. You can go get your own clothes, pay for your own clothes and your bills and all that. And you can do what you want. But again, there's a price to pay for that. And that price is you got to work hard. You got to, you know what I mean? So nothing comes without responsibility. And I think young folks get frustrated or have some false sense of understanding that things are just going to come to them like magic. And so for some folks, they think, smashing somebody upside the head and taking their car or taking their valuables are the answer, only to find out that you do that over a couple of times. You may not have gotten caught the first time and the second time and the third time. So hell, you might get caught and then get back out. But what you're doing is you're sending a pattern. You're creating a pattern in your life and spending. That's what you spent your time doing. And so you don't have access to anything else other than that kind of stuff. And that life and people in jail and people that are dead, if they could come back, would tell you that it's not. You don't get that period doesn't last a long time. There's something coming for you. You're either going to be in jail, you've heard it. So what are you telling yourself?
Well, that's it. So you said quite a few things that,
I know.
Yeah, that are kind of interesting. So I'm going to start from the last thing. You talked about the end game,
right,
of it all, right? The end game of it all is that they end up either dead or in jail, right? And so I want to throw this in so that it doesn't sound like it's magical. It's what they're attracting.
Right.
There is definitely, I don't care how intelligent or spiritual you are, the energy you put out attracts a like energy.
Yeah, karma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They call it karma. It attracts. So if you're going to play this deadly game, it's interesting because, any gangster,
yeah,
regardless of how legal he may look or she may look or not,
right,
knows that it's a dangerous game. And so they set themselves up so that they're protected. Bodyguards.
Right. right. They shelter themselves.
Trap doors, security and surveillance.
Yeah, financial. All kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Right. So there's that part of it. It's the energy that you attract. Impact. Yeah. So, yeah, well, as I said, people do things for themselves, not necessarily against other people, right? But what gets ignored is the impact not only on the other people that are being affected, but also on the person that does the action.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of, quite honestly, the biggest example of that is the Zionist attack on Palestine.
Uh-oh.
I hate to say it, but the impact is, okay, yeah, they've wiped out all these Palestinians and future, quote-unquote, terrorists.
Right.
But, boy, are they losing the war in the minds of people.
Sure.
That's the impact on them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, about that? Wow.
And then, wow. And then you have...
Sit with that for a second, yeah, folks.
and then you have, you know, some of these, how can I say, I'll just call them bigots, who are now attacking Jewish people here in the United States,
yeah,
because of what they're doing in Hamas, what they're doing in,
it's a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle.
It's a, and but so then the question becomes, well, when you choose to do the right thing, who can mess with you?
Right, right, right.
And it's not like who can mess with you because you got the biggest guns and the baddest bombs, but nobody can mess with you because you've done nothing,
and your karma is clean,
right? Exactly.
And so I think people don't, when you take there's a cause and effect. When you take the responsibility of harming someone, especially just for yourself to gain, there's something karma. I believe that karma is waiting for you, whether you can get it now in this life. So you can't expect to just do bad and just, that's it.
All right.
I truly believe that. I believe something, at some point, it might be on the afterlife that's waiting for you. Soon as you pass, close your eyes and go to the other world, it's like, come on over here. I got a special place for you. Come on. You've been so big and bad. We got a lot of big and bad people over there. Y'all can, we're going to put you all in a room and y'all can big and bad. And so I just feel like, here it is. But here's the other side of it. And is that each human being is granted a life. Some of us are less fortunate where we come into the life with some shortcomings, so, you know, some illnesses. You know, I was just with a friend yesterday who's dealing with cancer. And to see him frail, and looking at what we both know could come sooner than later, God forbid that it's sooner than later. And you can, unfortunately, we're at our most vulnerable and truest point when we are met with adversity, when we're met, you know, in the way of health, in the way of, I mean, there are many things. But when we're in those spaces, and I know they don't feel good, and, you know, health is a big one, or you lost something or someone or money or whatever, that's when things are meaningful to the highest order. You know, we walk in, when things are good, we're like, woo, we don't think about it. But when you get sick, And you're to the point of being sick, and death is like inching. You can see it closer and closer, because when you're living, death is way over there. The view of death is way over there. But as you get older or you get sick, death suddenly is right a few inches from you, or a few feet from you, and you're like, okay, hey, death, you get real humble. You get scared.
You get scared
because you don't want. And things become meaningful because you realize, damn, however age you are, for most of you came into this world completely free from a lot of, a lot of the bad behavior that people get. It's all learned. It's learned behavior. You don't come into this world wanting to rob somebody. You don't come in the world wanting to smash somebody upside the head for no reason. You don't come into this world wanting to take more than most people have and more than you'll ever spend in your life. You don't come into this world strategizing how you can get more when you already have more. You don't come into this world. You come into this world free from all that stuff. And then somewhere down the road, you like, I want more. I want more, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get more. And so you have to start looking at, you have to step back and take a look at yourself and say, what's really meaningful? What, you know, how much more can I have? why do I want to harm somebody and take their stuff when I can simply, if I'm patient enough, in most cases, especially, and I'll say this, especially in America, if you do a couple of right little turns, you're really good. You're good more than most people probably in the world. You know, I mean, so you have a 47 inch instead of a 65 or a 90 inch. So what? If you work, I mean, I've been in that person. I've been where I didn't have anything. And then I look up and I'm like, wow, look at all this. I got way more than I need. And I'm just saying, be patient enough as a human being and be patient enough to just really go through the journey of life and get what's there for you. Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
With good karma.
Right. With good karma. So, this is so funny because, there is a verse in the Quran, and I'm sure it's also in the Bible and the Torah, in which, God talks about what man's life is going to be like on earth after he fell out of favor, so to speak. And that verse basically says that you will toil throughout life. You will toil, right? And so, yet, oh my God. So this also reflects on something else, but I'll get to that. So you will toil without life. That means that every day of your life will be spent on working on something. Whether you're at a job or you're at home or you're retired or you own your own business or you wake up and there's nothing to do, you're going to be working on something, right?
That sounds like just life.
Right? Yet, there's a fair amount of us who are trying to get there. And what I mean by there is arrive at this space where we're not going to be working on anything.
Right. We'll be on vacation for the rest of our
lives. For the rest of our lives. Right. Thus, you know, so the guy who broke the window was trying to get somewhere. He was trying to get something so that he could get somewhere so that he could be something.
Okay.
So, right? I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was. But it's all, I would dare say that we're, a lot of us are trying to get to a point where we get to do nothing. And it's impossible on this planet.
Right. I mean, we're here to do something.
But we have it. So there may be this image of like, you know, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and Donald Trump and all the wealthy people in the world don't do nothing. They just sit back and collect money. Well, that's what I want to do. I want to sit back and do nothing and collect money. Okay. All right. So that's a thing to get to. And it totally, how can I say this? Does not give respect to, it doesn't give respect to, well, what they've done to get there, number one.
The journey
that they took and continue to take. I mean, you know, none of them are actually stopping and saying, well, I've made it. No one on this planet has made it. Anybody who's made it is probably
dead.
Yeah,
I don't know how anybody can make it, first of
all. Yeah,
you didn't make it. That's not your right to make it.
Well, you know what I mean by make it.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. But I mean, I'm just saying, when I hear it as a concept, making something, when I think of that, the overall ultimate making is, you know, that would be a higher power, God. You know what I mean? Making something. You're here. I mean, really, I mean, it sounds like, I feel, you know, we have all these books and we have prophets and things like that. And I mean, it seems like humans should be in the business of creating better karma for mankind, right? There have been instances that mankind has not always made the right choices, and we're riddled throughout our lives with different choices, different trials and tribulations. Some of them you know, we're going to fail, and some of them we're going to triumph in. But that's part of the journey, and that's what we're here for. We're not here to end somebody else's journey in that. We're not here to take away from somebody's journey in that. In fact, I would dare say that we're here to promote the very thing that we're given on a day-to-day basis, and that's life. To help someone is helping someone live life. You know what I mean? Like, I went over to help a friend of mine call me and asked me to help him do some things. Just had move some furniture around he couldn't do. And someone told me this over on Thursday. I mean, I think it was Friday. They said, "Oh, you know, I see you. You're a humble spirit who is of service." And I took that as the highest compliment, because that's what we're here to do, be of service, right? Be of service. I would think and I would hope that when speaking of Elon Musk or whether it's Jeff Bezos or whatever, is they created these platforms to be of service to humans, right? Like, oh, wow, here's something in evolution and in life and with all the technology, AI, I would think, to be of service and to help humans further their lives in one way or other. Not to take away, but to further. Unfortunately, we have our egos to deal with. And so our ego goes, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll take that and I'll do this. Not considering that may not be the best interest of human life, to promote human life. That may not be the good, it's like, I went to see Oppenheimer and the guy created the atom bomb. It's like, I'm not sure how that would promote human life. Like, do you know what you just created? And then he tried to come back like, wait a minute, you know what? That's not good. Well, it's too late now. You let the cat out the bag. You should have been like, as great as this is, That's not going to serve human. That's not going to serve us as humans. Put that away. Put that away, because it's not going to serve us. That's a no-no right there. And as tempting as it is, we've all been tempted. Just like it's like a piece of chocolate cake. It's like, or a piece of dessert. You're like, yeah, but as good as that is, it's not going to serve you. And so that's a small thing I'm talking about on a personal level. But I'm just saying, when you do much is, what's the saying? Much is given, much is required. And so you got to really understand what you're creating, unless you just don't give a damn about human life at all. Wow. And it's all, and you're in this for everything you're in is to serve your own personal need.
Yeah.
If God, and I say to people, when you think that way, if God meant for you to be by yourself and selfish, He would have just created you all by yourself, and you'd have been here all by yourself. But no, we're here with other human beings of all different nationalities, from all over the world, from different walks of life, with going through their own experience. Let's help one another the best way we can to promote while you're here. It's like having a relative. You come into my house. I may not have, 10 dishes and 5 forks and knives and a little bit in the refrigerator, but what I do have, I'm going to share with you the best way I can. So that you make that's a great, they may say, wow, that little bit you have was some of the best, that was the best experience I've ever had in my life. So you don't understand, you don't understand or sometimes realize the what you're given. I know people are like, wow, this is so hard. I don't have what they have. But what you're given is just what's given to you, so that everybody starts out from somewhere. What you're given, every expert, they said this in the book, every expert or everybody's a successful person started out with the beginning. They started out the beginning. Be patient. Be patient. That's all. Be patient. It's good. You know what I mean? Be patient with yourself.
Yeah. So, and I hear that. I hear that. And what I'm also hearing is you have a plea and an idea that the people that you're speaking to can all do that when they make the right choice on their own.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm, that they, that
if it, they choose right, but they, it's, And it is. All their choices are their choices, yeah. No doubt. No
and it's
doubt.
Not going to be easy. It's not always going to be like, you know, what you want at that given time. It's not going to, you know, people, and I think younger people and people different from, you know, when we were coming up, you know, they're seeing that it's not just one way. People are realizing, oh, they don't have to do this 4 years of college to be successful and make a decent living for themselves. They don't have to go to the military and do it that way. They can. That's an option, and it's great.
Right.
But there are many different ways you can do this. And so now through, you know, the great advancements of technology for mankind, they can now see a bigger world outside of the world that they're given in that space. Like, your world is not just about the physical space you're in, but now with technology, you can get on the internet and go many places and talk to other place people from different things. And so it's up to you to use that for the good of like, I don't understand how another human being would harm or kill another human being and figure that's an advancement of any. I don't, like, you weren't given the right to make that human being, to create that human being. What makes you think you have the right to end that human being's life? I don't get it. Like, you, that's not your business. You've got to be, I know people are dissatisfied, I'm sorry. I know people are dissatisfied with stuff and they think things are unfair. Play it out, though. Play it out. If you would have, you know, as a saying, if you were that bad, you would have made yourself better. If you were that good, you would have made yourself better. You don't have the right to, that's not for you to cause judgment. Like, I tell people all the time, they're like, da da da, man, what do you think about this? And some things, you know, listen, I'm going to be frank. I'm going to be honest. Listen, I know there's a LGBTQ. I don't have all the letters, right? Lesbian, gays. I have friends that are lesbian, gays, trans, all that kind of stuff. God bless them. I might take some heat for this. Because I know that community is very sensitive because they've had to endure a lot. And mad respect. And I'm not necessarily in line with it. And I don't have to be because, quite frankly, it's none of my business. Second, I respect them as a human being first. So I'm always going to have love for them. I don't care whether I agree with their lifestyle or not. And the other thing is, I'm not in the business of judgment. You don't have to even worry about me because I don't have to judge. That's not my point to judge you. To be ultimately, I can judge you from a personal human experience, but from a life experience, it means nothing. I can't be 100% sure that everything I'm doing is right, even though I think it's right. You can't be a student and then grade yourself. Someone's going to grade you, and I'm not the person that's doing the grading, okay? There's going to come a time when we're all graded. Hmm. We have to grade. But you aren't the person, we aren't the people to grade. We're the students. That's why all these books and prophets are here to try to lead us. We all of a sudden, our egos, want to be the student, the teacher, and everything. I could be wrong, that we're all students of life, and granted every day that we're living, we're granted another opportunity to get it right. You spend your time getting, you got enough on your plate. There's such a journey. I'm gonna shut up. I know there's such a journey of life for all of us on an individual, personal level. You shouldn't really have that much time worrying about somebody else's journey. Like, that's what are you doing?
Well, yeah, that's you know, that goes back to the point I was making earlier about toiling. I had a recent experience where, well, you know, I'll just say, in putting together this band and managing the band. And,
right.
Okay. I'm bringing it. What?
Bring it on home.
Yeah. I love it. Thank you, sir. In a sense, yeah, because there's always something to do. There's right. always something to do. And yet my something inside of me is like wants to get to a point where I'm coasting, but there's no coasting. There's just no coasting. There's just always something to do in preparation for this gig and then or for the show. And then after that, there's going to be things to do. And, you know, there's always something to do. And there's no easy way out. There's no easy way out.
Right.
Thus, we will be toiling for the rest of our lives to fulfill on what it is that we want.
Yeah, those 12 songs that you got to learn them. Prior to learning them, you don't know them.
Right.
But the journey and the enjoyment is learning those songs.
Yeah.
And then there'll be another 12 more songs.
Exactly. So, anyway, this has been a very spirited conversation.
I'm sorry.
No, don't
forgive
apologize.
Me, audience, for ranting. These are things that are just.
Well, that's part of the reason why we have this show. But, you know, interestingly enough, I think the next time we come on the air, we want to tackle something about having an uncommon conversation. And recently, you and I were having this conversation after we both saw the movie Origin.
Right.
And we were left with the question. What does it look like to have conversations of reconciliation? Remember that?
Yeah. Wow. That's great. There you go.
Yeah.
That's something. That's very proactive too.
Exactly. So I don't want to go into that now.
Okay.
But on our next podcast, I think I would like for us to
say it again. What would it look like
for us in America? To have conversations of reconciliation. It's something that's happened in South Africa after apartheid. So what would it look like, and why aren't those conversations happening here in the United States?
To help clean this mess up.
Yeah, help clean this mess up. Exactly. Yeah, so like that. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we hope you enjoyed. This is episode 16.
16.
Hot dang.
Hey, dang. Diggity dang. No, that's great.
Episode 16. So that means for the past 32 weeks, my partner and I have been coming together and meeting you guys out here in the Digisphere.
Yeah, Digisphere. There you go. I like that.
And so we look forward to another 16 and beyond. And so we want to thank you for listening to us on this episode of Not Your Common Conversation.